Class is in session. All right, rest your feet and grab a seat. Class is in session, and welcome to Binary Gamer, the podcast where we are going to learn a little something about video games. I'm your host, Tony Spears, and let's just get the business out of the way so we can get to the topic of this week's episode. Binary Gamer is a podcast you can listen to on all the places you listen to your podcast, whether it be iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Podcast. You can find Binary Gamer in all those places. You can also check us out over on YouTube. And, of course, you can hit me up over on Twitter at iFlipWithTheSwitch. The Twitter handle will be in the description of the podcast because spelling it sometimes just is not enough. But it's spelled how it sounds, so that should help. Also, if you want to hang out, talk, maybe get with the guys over in the Binary Gamers crew and just talk games, you can check us out over on our Discord server. Also, I will be posting the link to that down in the description of this episode. So, without any further ado, business is out of the way. Let's get to this week's topic. So, today is February 6th, 2018. And if you're not aware, Monster Hunter World has been unleashed upon the world, and the game is amazing. So, I've been playing the game for the past 5 days now, and it has been amazing. I have been streaming a lot of it over on YouTube and Twitch, and there's videos over there if you want to go and check that out. All of it is really, really awesome. But what I want to talk about today isn't so much just Monster Hunter World, but I think it's important that we look back on where Monster Hunter began and kind of the history and lineage to it, because Monster Hunter hasn't always been a popular franchise in the States. In fact, it struggled in America for quite some time. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a dive into the roots, the history, nay, the origins of Monster Hunter. So in order to understand Monster Hunter, not only as a game, but as a franchise, it's important to know a handful of things. One, it's developed by Capcom, has been since its origin, and for the most part has stayed true in Capcom's hands since its inception back in 2004. So in 2004, Monster Hunter gets its North America and Japanese release. The EU and Australia wouldn't see this game for another year, which is unfortunate, but it would eventually be worldwide before the middle of 2005. So where is this game's roots at? Like, where does it begin? Well, the best place to start is on the PlayStation 2. So when it was released on the PS2, this game was unlike anything else that had come out. So the basic loop of the Monster Hunter series is you are a novice hunter, a fresh face off of whatever wagon or boat or caravan brought you to town, and you are charged by some elder or a chief. Someone in the community is like, hey man, you're a hunter, you should go hunt these monsters for us because monsters are a big deal around here. There's no name to the world that you're in. In fact, in Monster Hunter World, the first mention of a continent outside of the one that you have presumably been on for the previous games is mentioned, and it's just called the New World. There's no like lines or allegiances. There's no real telling where people come from. There's no like countries or nations to say. It's just people and villages in random places, and then based upon where you're at, the geography is different. And it has been different from game to game to certain extents. There's usually, a big plains-esque field. There's usually a snow level, a desert. Most of the time you end up in a volcano at some point. And then they mix it up with like swamps and like more like cave, expansive cave systems and stuff like that. The levels differ. The areas differ from game to game. But for the most part, you kind of get those mixtures of things, and the difficulty ramps up as you go further and further. But in the first game, like I said, you start out as a novice hunter, and you're just out, hunting monsters. It's in the title, right? And you have a selection of tools, and then you're sent out into the wild. There's no real explanations to a lot of things. The early games expected you to experiment and fail and experiment again and fail again until you just figured it out. The learning curve in the first Monster Hunter, in fact, in most of the Monster Hunter games up until the last few titles, has been steep, to say the least. The beginning of the series, you start with a very limited pool of weapons, but for the most part, you have your mainstays like the Great Sword, the sword and shield, the lance, the bow, and then two flavors of like bolt gun, essentially a heavy and a light variant. Different uses for different use cases, right? Oh, and then the hammer. Can't forget the hammer. So each sim has different combos, different play styles, different strengths and weaknesses, but they don't tell you this. You get raw numbers in the beginning. It's like, man, sword and shield doesn't do nearly as much damage as the greatsword, but obviously the greatsword's a lot slower than the sword and shield, so I think I'll use the hammer. And then come to find out the hammer is the slowest, but it does the most damage, and the lance is really good for, turtling up and, pulling aggro, but they don't tell you that. Like, none of that is explained. So you go through and you try and you fail and you try and you fail, and this was a very different experience on a platform like the PS2. People hadn't seen this on a home console before. So then the game is met with what can only be considered like middling to not so great reviews, reception, mostly because this is a very Japanese game and its mentality and in the way that it plays. And in the US, people weren't really down with that. Like, they're not looking to grind 15, 20 hours just to get decent enough to, to move on through the game. Japanese gamers, on the other hand, have no problem with this. So in Japan, Monster Hunter stayed, pretty concurrent, and it stayed very popular, whereas in North America, it kind of waned. So then as we move on to 2006 with Monster Hunter 2, Monster Hunter 2 did something different in that it not only came out to the PlayStation 2, but then later on came to the PSP. So this was a big deal. This is where things change up a lot for the Monster Hunter franchise, because the PSP, being Sony's first outing into the portable space, lent itself perfectly to Monster Hunter's new outing into not only being a now focused portable game, but also multiplayer. So the PSP, by all intents and purposes, was not great for multiplayer, but it was doable. It wasn't fantastic, but it could be done. I have memories myself of being deployed with my friends. We're all sitting around with our PSPs playing Monster Hunter, and everyone's talking to each other and yelling at each other because this freaking Rathalos is about to murder all of us. But for the most part, it was very different. It was a new take on the franchise, and a lot of people liked it. So it caught on pretty good in the States, but not until later when it came out as Monster Hunter Freedom Unite. So in the States, Monster Hunter Freedom Unite is actually Monster Hunter 2. In Japan, it always stayed Monster Hunter 2. And Freedom Unite would be the PSP release as opposed to Monster Hunter 2 just being strictly on the PlayStation 2. That's where it stayed. It was still very popular worldwide on the PSP, but different names, different regions. That's a whole other spiel. So this wasn't just awesome because it was on a handheld, but it was also awesome because they introduced a whole lot of different systems into it now, right? So now you have the use of gems to enhance your armor, which is made by collecting parts off of monsters that you kill. And then you're making new weapons now. They introduced the longsword, which is essentially, it's like a mix between the, it's a mix between the greatsword and the speed of the sword and shield, except it has a much longer reach. It's pretty cool. Not really my flavor. And then they introduced the gun lance, which is exactly what it sounds like. It's a lance with a cannon built into it. And then the hunting horn and then the bow. Sorry, the original game didn't have the bow. The original game just had the two bowcasters. So the two, like, crossbows, essentially. And the hunting horn was designed specifically to be a support weapon more than an actual, like, I'm going to solo the game using this hunting horn, because the whole purpose of the hunting horn was you would post up somewhere, hopefully away from the monster that everybody's fighting, and you start playing this combination of notes, and different combinations of notes give different buffs or power-ups to your party. And in some cases with higher level hunting horns, you'd actually heal people with through the power of music. Essentially, it introduced being a bard into Monster Hunter. Not so great if you're soloing, an invaluable tool if you have a full party of four and someone's willing to take the loss, you know, to take the L, if you will, and be the resident minstrel and start playing this hunting horn. I'm telling you right now, it looks funny when you're doing it, but it is, again, like I said, an invaluable tool, especially when you're fighting something like a Rathalos, or in this game, it introduced a Tigress. So the other thing about the Monster Hunter games is there's a whole bevy of monsters, and they change from game to game. Now, there are some that stay in pretty much all the games, like the Rathalos and the Rathian have pretty much been in every single Monster Hunter game. I can't think of a title in the series that they haven't been in. And to be honest with you, it would kind of bum me out if they weren't, because they're the iconic dragons. Like, they're on the cover of the very first game. So it's one of those things that you look for in the game. And even in Monster Hunter World, you have a Rathian and a Rathalos that you run into and that you can hunt. Essentially, the Rathalos is the male, the Rathian is the female. And it's a big territory dispute and stuff like that. They're incredibly dangerous and hard to hunt, especially solo. But if you have a good team and everybody's organized and you're all working together, they go down like a house of cards. So Monster Hunter 2 really, it didn't do great in the States because the PSP didn't really catch on. Now, to niche audiences like myself and my friends, we loved it. It was awesome. Like, we were down with this game. So cool. But it didn't really catch on. And it started to kind of go into obscurity as far as the series itself was concerned. Now, the main thing you have to remember is that Monster Hunter has a following in the States very similar to, like, well, I guess Dark Souls isn't the best analogy, only because Dark Souls has a much wider audience that find it appealing. But the hardcore audience to Monster Hunter was very much in that vein where, like, when the people that play Monster Hunter, they play Monster Hunter and they play it serious. Like, they want to master the game. They want to, you know, to quote Pokemon, be the very best. Like, no one ever was. So it had its fan base here in the States, but it was only just enough to keep the releases of the games coming to North America in any type of window that was, you know, tolerable by the fan base. But for the most part, people in the States just didn't really care. They're like, eh, well, okay, this is a cool game. And then it would come out, and then there'd be a handful of, you know, you know, 10, 20, 30,000 people that are like, oh, yes. But in the grand scheme of video games, that's not selling gangbusters. But they had enough of a dedicated audience and still enough of a worldwide audience to keep the games coming, which is great. So then we fast forward to 2009/2010, and we get Monster Hunter Tree. Not Monster Hunter 3, you heard me right. Tree. It depends on where you're at and who's explaining the game, but I always say Tree. It's spelled Tri, T-R-I. It is essentially Monster Hunter 3, and it was released on the Wii, and then re-released on the Wii U in 2012. So it's... this game did a lot of different stuff and introduced a lot of different stuff. It was the very first time that they had underwater exploration and combat, which did not go great. It introduced the Switch Axe, which is exactly as complicated as it sounds. It's an axe that can transform from an axe into a sword and back again. It has this whole power-up system. Like I said before, very involved. The systems in these games are very involved, but if you take the time to learn them, then you can actually get really good with more complicated weapons. Like right now in Monster Hunter World, I'm trying to get my own Switch Axe skills up, but it is not easy, my friends. Not easy at all. So, then a handful of weapons like the Dual Swords, the Gun Lance, the Bow, and the Hunting Horn were not included in Monster Hunter Tri, which made a lot of people mad because the Dual Swords are kind of a mainstay. Like, if you want the ease of using the sword and shield, but you just want to put out ridiculous amounts of damage but have no defense whatsoever, you want to go with the dual swords. The dual swords are going to help you dish the dirt. The gun lance was very useful. The bow and the hunting horn, like I said, they all had their place, but they excluded them from this game, and I don't really know why. So the Monster Hunter Tri, however you want to pronounce it, was not met with great reception, and Nintendo sort of did them dirty by leaving it on the Wii U, which, as we all know, was kind of sent out to die in a lot of ways. Like, the Wii U had its good games, you know what I mean? Like, it had Mario Maker, Super Mario 3D World was awesome. I mean, let's be real, Nintendo Land was even pretty good. My kids still play Nintendo Land, but overall, the system didn't do great. I mean, they just reported last week that the Switch has sold more in the year and some change has been out than the Wii U did in its entire lifetime. So that tells you something. So this game didn't do so hot. In fact, it did kind of poorly. But that didn't stop them. That did not stop the people over at Capcom from churning these games out. In fact, no, my friends. 2013 sees Monster Hunter 4 come to the 3DS. And let me tell you, this was the game that got people back. So it was released in the States as Monster Hunter 4 Ultimate on the 3DS. So not much different aside from the inclusion of the Charge Blade, which is kind of the same concept as the Switch Axe, except now it's a sword and shield that turns into a giant axe. Yeah, I know. And then the Insect Glaive, which is so complicated that I would need a good portion of this episode to explain that weapon. But let's just say that it's a glaive. It's a double-sided spear, essentially, with a bug attached to it, and you use the bug to get power-ups for your attacks. It's crazy. So, yeah, I know. So, that goes on, and this game helped bring it back, helped bring Monster Hunter back in a big, bad way. A lot of people really like this, and not just, you know, in Japan and in the States, but everywhere. It saw really good reviews all over the world. And because of that, that caused Capcom to realize, oh snap, maybe we should make these more inclusive and we'll expand our audience. Because Monster Hunter 4 was one of the few, was one of the first Monster Hunter games to give you any type of inclination of like what is going on with these systems, like how your abilities stack, because different armor gives you different abilities. So if you mix and match certain armor, you'll get these buffed up abilities. Well, they don't explain that in the early games. You just kind of have to do the math. But Monster Hunter 4 actually helps explain some of those systems. And in doing that, it makes it more inclusive. Like, it's not a full-blown tutorial. They give you some hints, but for the most part, it explains a lot more than the previous games ever did. Then they come out with Monster Hunter Generations in 2015. Monster Hunter Generations was more emphasized in the action and customization portion than anything else. Honestly, it was a very different game from the previous Monster Hunter games, or even what Monster Hunter World is now. And because of that, it wasn't too popular. In fact, I'm be perfectly honest with you, I'm not very familiar with it because I actually didn't even know this game existed. It came out 2015 on the 3DS, and I had never heard of it. I actually did a little bit of homework, and it's a pretty good looking game. I don't know if I would play it myself, but you know what? It got decent reviews. It's getting 85, 8.75, 8 out of 10, 8 out of 10, 8 out of 10. Yeah, so it did pretty good. I just I'd never heard of it, so I can't really speak on something that I'm not familiar with. But what I do know is that it helped to pave the way for Monster Hunter World. So Capcom took their time with this game. So much so that I don't think they realized the mistake they made. And I'll explain that. So Monster Hunter World released this year, PS4 and Xbox. Awesome game. It's selling like freaking hotcakes over here. It's also going to be coming to PC, but not until like the fall of this year. And that's not good. That's not a good plan, because by the time it does get released, the people that wanted to play it have played it, and the people that were going to play it are playing something else. Why they didn't do day and date with all three platforms, beyond me. But I tell you right now, it was not a good idea, because I honestly think it's going to get on PC and it'll probably do decent, but it's not going to do the numbers that they're going to want it to do. And then unfortunately, that might steer them away from ever doing a PC release again, because this will be the first PC release of a Monster Hunter game. And when it comes to online multiplayer, I don't know where else you want to be in the world, but other than inside a PC infrastructure, when it comes to the ease of use, like for crying out loud, you have Steam. Steam makes it incredibly easy to do multiplayer. And then, of course, you have things like Discord, which allow you to have very easy, chat, like team communication, the things you need in a multiplayer Monster Hunter game. So it boggles my mind as to why they're doing a late release for the PC. Now, that aside, let's get into the good. Monster Hunter World is, like, without a doubt, the best Monster Hunter game I've played. And I've played quite a few of them. Generations not included, but I've played almost every single one of these games. And what I can tell you is that when it comes to, like, am I a first timer? Am I a hunting veteran? Have I only played a few of the games, but haven't played them in a long time? This game is for you. It is so much more forgiving to novice players than the previous games, that is almost a sin. Because they give you tutorials for everything. Almost to the point to where I'm actually kind of getting irritated with some of it, because I'm getting tutorials for stuff that I obviously know. But then I have to keep telling myself, well, there's someone that's playing this game for the very first time, or this is their very first Monster Hunter game, and they need this information. And it's really good for that. It's amazing how much they've done in the whole realm of, like, all right, we're going to explain to you how this system works, and then that way you'll be able to actually utilize it to, make your hunter better, or to help your Palico and things like that. Man, I didn't even mention Palicos before. God, okay, where do I begin? So, like, Palicos have been in the series. Palicos are awesome. They're this little cat guy that follows you around, and you can dress him up in armor, and he helps you out in fights, and he's really, really useful, especially in this game, because he can actually give you, like, healing items and stuff, which is really nice when you're getting your ass handed to you by a monster. But this game does so many things different, but so many of them well, that it's hard to pick a specific point on why this game is so much better than the previous ones. But there are two primary areas of emphasis, I think, that we can go into that really expound on why this game is hands down the best entry in the series. First point, the hunting grounds that you're going into, the different areas you're going into now are all seamless. Now, they're not huge by any stretch of the imagination, but they're a lot more linear. They're a lot more vertical. So you've got some up and down trajectory, which adds depth to the places you're going, the things you're encountering, the stuff you're finding. But now it's all seamless, because before in the Monster Hunter games, when you went from zone to zone in any of the hunting grounds, you hit a loading screen. It doesn't do that now. Now you can move from zone to zone seamlessly, essentially the entire map. And that is awesome, because it makes fighting monsters so much more dynamic. Because now it's like, okay, I can retreat back to this place and I don't have to worry about loading out of the zone and then coming back into the same zone and then, oh crap, where is the guy? Like, now you have like actual like sight lines that matter in this game. I always thought it was funny. In the previous Monster Hunter games, you could always buy a pair of binoculars. You can buy binoculars in this one too, but you can always buy a pair of binoculars so you can see things at a distance. And in my head, I was always like, why do I need this? Like, I can see to the end of the zone. If there's a monster there, I can see it. But in this one, you actually do need the binoculars sometimes, because sometimes at a distance, you're like, well, is that Arathios? Is that one of those Boros things, which is like, it's essentially a battering ram with teeth? It's a completely different, like, you know, I guess you'd say playing field that you're on now, because now you can just, you know, you have the run of the entire hunting ground, and the monster does too. So it makes things a lot more dynamic and makes you have to think more when it comes to like how you're moving around. Very awesome. Great addition. So the other part where this game, I think, is leaps and bounds ahead of the previous games is in the way that the combat works now. The combat is much more forgiving. Like, the basic combos are still there. I can still pull off my normal, you know, 1-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3 combo with a greatsword and just smash a monster until the sharpness is gone forever. Now, in the previous games, though, my sharpness starts going down and I had to start using whetstones. And the bad thing about whetstones is they were finite. Like, if you ran out of whetstones, you just have this dull butter knife that you're hitting them with, and it's just going to bounce off them every time. But not in this one. In this one, you have infinite whetstones. And crafting can be done automatically as soon as you pick up the necessary item. So you're running around, you see an herb, but you're also running from a monster, and you're like, crap, I'm out of healing stuff. So you pick up the herb, and it'll automatically craft you the potion that you need. This game has done a lot of quality of life improvements. That's what I've been hearing a lot of people call it, and to be perfectly honest, I have to agree, because they've done a lot of work in the area of keeping you out of the menus as much, which was one of the big things that you were doing a lot in the previous games. Was you were in menus all the time, balancing different equipment, equipping gems to different stuff, crafting potions, making traps. I mean, the list goes on, and you were in those menus forever. But now they've made it to where those menus aren't as vital, and you don't have to be in them as long. And that's great, because that keeps you in the gameplay more. And it turns a hunt that probably would have been 30 or 40 minutes into a hunt that you could probably knock out in 25. And that's awesome, because as much as I like being in this world and I like playing this game and it is a lot of fun, I also want to maximize my time in that world, because I don't have as much time to play games like I used to. So it's nice that I can spend an hour playing this game and get what I would have got done in 3 hours in Monster Hunter 2. Like, that's a huge, like I said before, quality of life improvement, and that is awesome. So the last thing I'm going to say about Monster Hunter World is that this game is, man, it is so good. Two, it has so much room for not only improvement, but just to get better over time. Like, when I say room for improvement, I mean, like, there are little things they could tweak and they could change here and there in certain parts and certain systems to make things better. But when I say as well, for there's room for it to get better, like just the potential for DLC, for additional content, things like that, it's all there and is all looking awesome. Like, everything is coming up Milhouse when it comes to this game, And I could not be more excited. So that is basically where I'm going to leave this episode. I mean, was this a super deep dive into the history of Monster Hunter? No. But if you've never played Monster Hunter before, just know that if you decide to play Monster Hunter now, you are coming in at a good place. If you weren't there at the beginning, now is the time to get in. Because if you've ever had any curiosity whatsoever about, I hear about this Monster Hunter stuff and it sounds pretty cool, but man, I don't know. Like, it's a whole lot going on. Yes, there is a lot going on, but this game will show you all those things that are going on. It will explain the systems to you, and you will be a sword slinging, monster mashing, part carving badass in no time flat. So that's my take on Monster Hunter World. Is it awesome? Yup. Would I recommend it? Yup. Should you go out and play it right now? Yup. Am I going to play it as soon as I'm done recording this episode? Yup. So yeah, that's it. So thank you very much for listening. Remember, you can find Binary Gamer in all the places that you get your podcast, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music. If you can find a podcast there, you'll find Binary Gamer. Remember, you can head over to YouTube, check us out over there. You can also go over to Twitter at iFlipWithTheSwitch to just hit me up, chat, ask me some questions, tell me what your favorite game is. Tell me a game you'd like me to talk about on the podcast. Let me know, and I will respond back post haste. And of course, come and join us over on our Discord server, the Binary Gamers Discord server, and just hang out, start a conversation, play games together. It's an awesome time. So that is going to do it. Thank you very much for listening. Have an awesome day. Go play some games. Class dismissed. Thank you.
I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans, America's premier home purchase lender. We've created a new way to protect you from unpredictable interest rates. Our exclusive Rate Shield approval. First, we lock your interest rate for up to 90 days. Then, if rates go up, your rate stays locked. But if rates go down, your rate drops. Either way, you win. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
Rate Shield approval only valid on certain 30-year fixed rate loans. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply.
At Colorado State University Global Campus, online education isn't another thing we do. It's all we do. Get an interactive education that's built for working adults like you and that employers demand. Explore your options at csuglobal.edu.